This is the Overclocked Podcast, a weekly dose of video game music and conversation from OCRemix.org.
This week, we hear the tale of Mikolaj Stravinsky's journey through video game composition, learn about the North American Conference on Video Game Music from Ryan Thompson, and raise our voices in an extra lyrical playlist.
Hello, Brian.
Wow.
What an intro.
I was just in awe of that incredibly well-spoken and informative intro.
I thought long and hard about how I should present myself to the world today.
Exactly.
And I thought, hello would be sufficient.
And then saying my name, of course, which is very professional because now people know what my name is. Steven?
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's me, Steven. We're Steven and Brian, the podcasting brotherly duo here at the Overclock Podcast, and we're going to take you on a journey.
Yes, it is episode 56 of the Overclock Podcast, which I'm sure is a significant number in one way or the other.
It's my birthday.
And this is a significant episode in one way or another, because we've been working a long time on this interview with Mikolaj Stravinsky, which is very exciting, because he's done a lot of crazy work. For people who don't know, he did The Witcher 3. He's worked, I believe, on the Witcher expansions and also on the new game, Gwent.
Gwent. Oh, I hope that Gwent well for him.
Oh, wow. Yes.
Here's a fun fact, Brian. Do you know the project that brought Mikolaj into the industry in the first place?
Yes, I do.
Oh, really?
Yes, it was the GBA port of Tony Hawk's Underground.
That is 100% incorrect. If you want to find out the real answer, you should keep listening.
Was there a GBA port of Tony? I want to look that up now.
I think there was a GBA port of every Tony Hawk game.
Yeah, you're probably right. All right, let's see here. Tony Hawk Underground GBA. Tony Hawk's Underground for Game Boy Advance. Yes, but I don't think it was composed by Mikolaj Stravinsky, unfortunately.
What was the cartoon DS game? Tony Hawk's
Skate Land. Yeah.
That was pretty cool because it was one of the first handheld games that I ever played that had, sampled real, quote in quotes, real music. It was very compressed, but you could hear the lyrics.
Yeah, exactly. It had Green Day's Holiday and other songs. That's the only one I remember from that game.
I really like that we're bringing back the video game music news segment to the show.
You know, all that hot news about Tony Hawk. I guess he is doing something now. I'm just not sure what it is.
I don't know.
Anyway, that's probably not as relevant, so we can go ahead and jump into the episode here with our Remix Rewind. Let's look at
the legendary DJ Pretzel himself gets in on OCR's Super Mario RPG album with The Usurper Queen. Harpsichord and electronic bass create a beautiful anachronism. The ritually appointed throne room of a wicked monarch, decorated with plush hanging draperies, marble tile floors, multicolored stage lights, and fog machines, in equal measure. We'll be right back.
Darungin's Find Your Way is a 90s rock remix of the town theme from the original Final Fantasy, complete with the original lyrics, and it catches that 90s spirit by the faded flannel shirt. If the Warriors of Light were suburban latchkey kids, skateboarding home on chocobo-themed boards past chain-link fences, and that one strip mall where you can buy discount high potions, this would be playing in the background. Thinking that this world was at its end, and its fate belongs to you. Pressing on, there are those who discourage you. Trials, there's more than just a few. Each new day has a challenge of its own, but the light will see you through. Go left, go right, start another fight. Come back, stay another night. You'll find your way. Right now, somehow, take another chance again. Turn it right around. We're here to stay. So if ever you're in trouble, come back and fight another day. With the means to overcome what's in front of you, and even what you cannot see, you do well to remember. For these remixes and more, head over to ocremix.org.
Welcome back to another episode of the Intune Interview. That's the part of the show where we talk to people about the music that they make. I'm Steven, continuously your host. And today I'm really excited to have Mikolaj Strawinski in the studio with us. Hello, Mikolaj. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Steven. Hello, everybody.
Yeah, it's very nice to have you here.
I'm very happy to be here. Thanks.
Yeah, likewise. So let's kick it off with the same old question I always ask.
Uh-huh.
Who are you, and what have you worked on before?
So I write music. That's what I do for a living, and I write music for video games. I write music for all sorts of media, of course, television and films as well, and trailers as well. So, yeah, I live in Los Angeles. I sometimes travel to Warsaw, and I write music. I love music. I love music. It shaped in my entire life and my family.
It's amazing.
Because of that. Well,
you're in the right place.
That's what happens. Yes. It's like a healthy drug.
Yes, exactly.
After I graduated Berklee College of Music in 2004, I moved to Los Angeles and started ghostwriting for a couple of composers. And I wrote a lot of music for television. And during this time, this process really trained me to work with picture to improve not only composition but also production value of what I do.
Right.
During this time, I wrote a lot of music, probably about 7,000 tracks for television and different
languages. Wow! Yeah, that's pretty extensive.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's also related to I was brought up in Poland, so I had to deal with I was an international guy, so I had to deal with visa. I had certain limitations, so I did the best I could. And that was my training.
Right.
However, my heart has always naturally been in video game music. I've always been a player, and I love video game music. Sometime in 2012, I was offered to score a trailer. There was a pivotal point in my career, I would say. It was a trailer for a video game called Dark Souls 2. Say it's the one with the song, and and after that, you know, I got some offers to score video games, and the first one I did was called Mousecraft. Right after that came two games that turned out pretty successful. One was The Vanishing of Ethan Carter.
So that's a game that I have in my Steam library somewhere, but I still have not had a chance to play yet. But it
by
looks
all means,
really intriguing.
Yes, you should. You should. It's a game like no other, and it only takes about 5 hours to finish it. So
yes, that fits in. That fits in my schedule very well. I like the sound of that. So how did that Dark Souls trailer happen?
I was a finalist. Two or three times I was a finalist of a festival of film music called Transatlantic, and part of the application for that festival is to score an animation. So it, you know, aside from other things, it brought me a decent demo, a visual demo. Mm-hmm. So I made sure that people from Blur Studios saw it. And they were really excited about it. They liked it. And, you know, a couple of weeks later, it's weird, actually, come to think of it, because, you know, those cartoon movies that I scored for the Transatlantic Film Festivals, they were cartoon movies. They weren't really silly, but they were like, think Pixar, okay?
Right, yeah.
So some seriousness, but still, you know, it's a cartoon movie. And then a couple of weeks later, I received a phone call from Blur Studios and say, "Hey, we got a job for you." And I was like, "Yay!" So it's a trailer for a video game called Dark Souls. And at this time, I didn't really play. I didn't know what Dark Souls was.
Uh-huh.
They briefed me. All they told me is it's a serious game known for being very, 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 very difficult. Mm-hmm. And it's a surprise because Dark Souls 1 just happened, and it's not that much time that passed. And they're issuing Dark Souls 2. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to do that. And then, you know, they wanted progressive rock as a soundtrack for it. So, you know, I pretended I didn't have shivers and, you know, that I wasn't scared because I haven't done this kind of music in my life. But I did it. It turned out well. And as they say, the rest is history.
And it's such an interesting jumping on point, like to start with Dark Souls 2 trailer. Like that's a cool entry point to the industry.
I would say so. Yeah. Thanks.
So how did you get from Dark Souls to working more in the industry all the way to The Witcher, which is kind of maybe what you're best known for now?
Well, I had to fight for it, really. It was a competition to get this project that I've won. It took me, you know, I received instructions of what the demo should be about. That it's, mm-hmm. it was a combination of an RPG, fantasy and RPG soundtrack with a strong accent of Slavic music. And so I did a piece that took me a week to do, which is long time considering it was minute and a half, and normally it's kind of, you know, I could do it in 2 hours or less. But, you know, I really put my best foot forward, and then I waited for 6 months to hear back. And, you know, after 3 weeks, I told myself, okay, this is over. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, I didn't win it. I'm not going to do this game. Sad because I sacrificed so much for the demo. But I kept knocking at the door. I've never received a direct no, which I think would be always. I think every composer would appreciate hearing a no instead of a silence, because there is always this troubling remaining droplet of hope that, in this particular case, turned out to be a winning droplet, but in you know, in most cases, silence means no thank you. We took someone else. So, I kept waiting. I kept knocking and just didn't hear anything that would say, yeah, you're on board, until I received a phone call from them sometime in March. I think it was 2014, and I got on it.
So when you sort of stepped into the role of the Witcher composer, how did you approach learning about the series and the established music that was already there?
I disregarded the pre-existing music completely, aside from the theme or two that was lingering from mm-hmm. the previous parts. I had to obey it, and I had to reuse, I had to recycle it for the new game. However, the sound palette, the approach was completely new. I've known of Witcher. I've always recommended the books. They are really amazing. I always describe, I don't know if you had a chance to read them, but I always describe them as a Tolkien meets fantastic sense of humor. I mean, really, it's so funny. So I was a big fan. I've read those books, you know, a couple of times and during the 90s. So I was well aware of the Witcher's world. So I didn't have to do much research on that. I did have to do research on Slavic music, despite the fact that I'm Polish. Mm. But there was nothing that I was aware of that successfully combined Slavic sound with music for media of any kind. So I did some research on that.
Since you're not the only one who works on the Witcher soundtrack, especially considering the Witcher 3, who else was involved with it?
The in-house composer of CD Projekt is Marcin Przybyłowicz. So he was actually involved with the project much earlier than I was.
Right.
On top of that, there was a Percival band who contributed their great Slavic folk sound. I mean, they are really, we owe them a lot, and the especially the uniqueness of the sound of The Witcher. And on top of that, I have to mention a couple of solo players, amongst other two multi-instrumentalists. One is Robert Jaworski from another very successful folk band called Żywiołak, and my friend from Los Angeles, Amir Jagmaj, who is also an exceptional multi-instrumentalist.
That's pretty awesome.
Well, music is always better when you create it with
Oh, definitely.
You know, it's always should be a group effort.
When I was listening through it the other day, there are a lot of interesting uses of instruments. That's one of the first things that I took note of.
Well, I am, believe it or not, but despite being a piano player, I'm naturally drawn towards string instruments. They're plucked or strummed. And you may be able to hear this element in my other soundtracks as well. I made this my conscious effort to make this part of my sound palette. But as far as The Witcher goes, and the Gwent, for that matter, it really gave me an opportunity to dive really into this palette. And there are many string instruments in there, like bazooki, saz, rebec, dulcimer, or gusli. And there are other instruments as well, so a lot of other folk instruments. There are vocals. Vocals are a very important part of the soundtrack.
Yeah, definitely.
We almost decided to use songs as a tool for even combat music, which has never been done before, and I think it worked out very well. The reason for that is that when you read books, you read that a lot of fighting that was done by Geralt looked like a dance.
Right.
So the creators of the game tried to mirror that in a video game as well. So I actually made a mistake. I said that, you know, Marcin and I were the sole composers. That is not true, because some of the tracks we reorchestrated and enhanced some tracks from Percival, which by nature almost are songs.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah. So they sing in Polish language and in old Polish language and some other languages as well, but I'm not sure which ones.
So considering the instruments that you brought in, were a lot of them gathered from the same sort of cultural heritage or history, or did you pull from a lot of different places around the world?
Well, considering how big the game is, the Slavic color wasn't the only one predominant in the game. We also used Celtic music, and we also used, for one region, large region of the game, we used a mixture of everything. All this folk music is enhanced by orchestral sounds to make it more, you know, basically bigger, more Hollywood, more powerful. But not so much, not too many woodwinds instruments, orchestral woodwinds. There are many woodwinds instruments, folk woodwinds instruments. But yeah, you probably won't hear any synthesizers either, which is, come to think of it, you know, being an analog synth enthusiast, I would love to hear the folk music with synths. I think, do you know the band Clannad?
Yes, I do.
That's what they did. They scored a TV series from the 80s about Robin Hood. And that was it. It was folk instruments with synths. I thought it sounded phenomenal.
Let's step back for a second and say you were to sit down to write a new piece of music. What would you start with? Would you start with a specific feeling you wanted to get across, or maybe narratively, as in you want to tell a story with the song you're writing? What's your method?
First, it took me a couple of days to set up a template for The Witcher, right? I'm picking all these instruments that will work, throwing out the ones that won't. And then I start composing. Sometimes it's just improvising and taking little bits of this improvisation and developing them into composed ideas. Mm-hmm. I definitely think of space, rhythmic space. I think of intervals in the melody, larger intervals drawn more attention, smaller intervals not. So, you know, right. This is one of my tools that, you know, that I use when manipulating the player, how much I want him to take notice of music, right? Mm-hmm. You can be a little experimental, but you have to stay in realms of this particular genre, which is, as I said, right. A fantasy role-playing game, which has been established for a long time.
Maybe this is a good transition point. How would you describe the Gwent soundtrack in contrast with The Witcher 3?
Definitely the same sound palette, but different story to tell. Gwent is divided into two modes. One is a multiplayer mode, and the other one is single player mode. The multiplayer mode combines the Witcher music with a duel between two friends who want to kick each other's butt. Mm-hmm. That was
as friends are wont to do.
Yeah, and you know, it has to be rewarding. So that's my goal. The music for single player campaign, well, there is a story there, and it's kind of linear. So it's a different narrative, different emotion. I mean, definitely much closer to Witcher game than it had to be epic, it had to be serious, it had to be folksy as well, a little less tongue-in-cheek than the multiplayer mode.
So it kind of sounds like the multiplayer mode, since it's, you know, it's not a story, it's just like a, you know, a great big competition between, like you said, between friends, you might get a little more of the Witcher goofiness in that version.
The humor is in it almost by definition. I mean, two guys are playing cards between them, and you hear this bombastic, serious music, like the world is about to collapse, right? So
it's almost like bringing out humor through drama in a weird way.
Oh, definitely. I mean, to me, drama and combat naturally has humor in it. Maybe because I watched too many cartoons as a child. so the connection for me is easy. You take the seriousness of the combat and throw in a little bit of humor spices.
Yeah.
Very gently, though. You can't overdo it, and it has to be hidden. I would say it's mostly visible in Monster Deck.
Thank you.
I mean, come on, heavy metal is funny too.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Guy screaming at the stage, no one understand what. It definitely has the right amount of energy.
So to wrap all of this up, between Gwent, The Witcher 3, and you worked on the DLC to The Witcher 3, right?
Sure, yeah, the Blood and Wine.
Yeah, totally. Kind of taking all of that as a whole, what are some of the things you've taken away, like some lessons learned along the road?
One is I want to work with more unusual sounds, and I want to invite unique artists to my projects.
Mm-hmm.
When you're a film composer, video game composer, it doesn't matter, you spend a lot of time in your studio just by yourself. Sometimes you have to make a phone call or pick up a phone.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly you create, it's easy to create music by yourself because, you know, we all have, you know, powerful computers with a lot of samples. And
right.
So it's easy to forget that the true music, that more powerful music is created as a group effort. And I had jazz education, so it was, for a long time, it was embedded in me. But, you know, I it's easy to forget this when you're by yourself in a studio creating music. So that's one thing. Another thing is memorable melody is the king. And spacing, I mean, rhythmic spacing, like I said before, is really important to when you score the picture, because the spacing is inviting the picture in, what's happening, right? You have to give more space to music for it to work with picture of any kind. And last lesson for myself is to stay humble no matter what. Uh-huh. It's really important.
I think collaborating sort of helps with that process to me. Because you bring other people into your projects and you help with theirs, and you realize that we're all just humans.
They are humans, but they're also amazing professionals. And both the instrumentalists and other composers and sound engineers, many of them are just so amazing in what they do. It's just blind and stupid to think of yourself as the most important person. I mean, yeah. Definitely ego is your enemy.
Yeah, that is maybe the greatest lesson of all to take away from that. It was kind of fun to run through that series and see where it's taken you. Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, where is it taking you next? Are there any projects that you're working on right now that you are allowed to talk about?
Sure. Well, I've been involved for quite some time with four video games. One is the Gwent, mm-hmm. which is an ongoing thing. The other one, coming shortly, very important one, is Sniper 3 Ghost Warrior.
Okay.
Definitely look into that. Another one that I'm really proud of is Detached. Detached is a VR project.
Your first VR project?
Yes, yes. It happens in this space. It's really amazing. And last but not least is a game called Kursk. It's about Russian submarine that sunk in 2000. I'm very excited about this one too. It's unlike anything else. So those are the four video games I'm currently involved with.
That's awesome. That's a lot on your plate.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, working for the video games is cool because you have a lot of time. I mean, it really takes a long time
right.
to develop these games, and in television you have to supply music for yesterday.
Yeah, right.
And whereas in video games you have like a year to work on it. So I don't feel overloaded with these projects by any means.
So people want to learn more about that, more about you in general. Is there somewhere they can find you on the internet?
Yes, MySpace.
I like how ready that answer was.
Yeah. Where else? Yeah, of course, my website that needs to be redone.
Uh-huh.
It's pretty old with the picture of me from a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's MikolajStravinsky.com. I am very much present on my SoundCloud. I am on Facebook, and I am on Twitter, too.
Okay, very good. And we'll put all that in the show notes, so mm-hmm. it won't be hard to find. All right, Mikolaj, well, we had better start wrapping this up. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk with me. This is really fun.
Thank you, Stephen, for taking the time to talk with me. It has been fun, yes.
But for now, we are going to take you back to the show.
This week on Solo Track, we're talking with Ryan Thompson. We bumped into Ryan at MAGFest, and he's here with us today to talk about another fascinating event for the video game music scene, the North American Conference on Video Game Music.
Hi, everybody. I'm Ryan Thompson. You might know me as Bardic Knowledge on Twitter, OC Remix, and most of the corners of the internet where I spend most of my time. I'm a PhD candidate in musicology at the University of Minnesota. My research specialty within musicology is ludomusicology, which is the academic study of video game music or game audio, since, you know, we do sound effects too. I'm talking today mainly about the North American Conference on Video Game Music that was held on January 14th and 15th in Austin, Texas this year. One of the best parts of this conference is it's the rare space where game audio professionals sit and mingle with music academics. Normally, those are two kind of separate worlds, if you will. But it was really nice to have some game people, like who actually work in games, come to the conference. We had Penka Kunova as our keynote speaker. It was funny. She had great visual examples talking about like what exactly makes up her job and how she goes about doing it and how she relates to all the people that she has to talk to, both who know music and who don't know music, and how to have those types of conversations with people. One of the things that where we meet in the middle, if you will, is we have to learn how to talk about music with people who don't otherwise know much about music, and not just students, but, you know, research and of any kind is only valuable if you know how to communicate it to somebody, right? It can't just sit in an empty book in a library only for PhD candidates, right? That's not, I don't know, it's not awesome, right? You want to be able to talk about and present music to the public because it is good, right? I just come from MAGFest, where there's this giant public celebration of music. So why can't we do that at a really highbrow level as well? And this conference was a really, really great success in doing that. This conference is a series of academic paper presentations on researched insights into video game audio. So for instance, the first paper that was given, Kate Galloway read, "Digital Storytelling and the Spatiality and Sonic Cartography of Never Alone's Indigenous Modernity." And I don't know if you've seen Never Alone, the game, before, but it tells the story, and they worked in very close collaboration with the Inuit people, that is, Native Americans in Canada and Alaska, to create this story, this game, that was reflective of the Inuit culture and experience. And it talked about how finding sounds that are authentic to that, or sometimes sounds that work to recreate authenticity, even if they're not the right sounds, like foleying, for instance, sounds of ice cracking might be sounds like of things thrown on a parking lot, but making sure the sound works to help tell that story in a way that's responsible and in a way that's collaborative with Inuit people. It was a really fascinating talk to hear. And the whole conference was full of stuff that was just really great insights into video game audio.
As you can tell, there was a lot to cover here. So we asked Ryan to list a few of his highlights from the conference. Turns out, there were plenty.
There was a trend almost this year, and that's that we talked more about hardware, which is rarer for us, I feel like. Because if you have a degree in musicology, you're really good at talking about notes, almost by definition, right? We study European music centrically as in terms of the field at large. And so we have this really high-level, well-developed understanding of tonal music. Like, that's our world, right? But what we don't always know is things like hardware limitations of the Atari or the NES. Even those of us who study video games and video game music, most of that is new territory for us, and there were a lot of presentations that referenced that, and I was really excited about that. Mark Bennis gave a talk about how the loops in Pokemon Red and Blue were organized to save memory, because of course old Game Boy games, like the ROM of Pokemon Blue is less than a megabyte, right? Like, my dissertation is a bigger document in terms of file storage than that video game, right? It's ridiculous. I've, you know, Word documents that are bigger than that. And so suddenly memory becomes important in terms of saving it and figuring out what to do to save as much memory as possible. And what the composers for Pokemon did, some of the tracks, each of the timbres, each of the channels on the Game Boy, has a loop length that's a different amount of time. And so it doesn't actually truly loop around until you do the lowest common denominator of all three of those time intervals. And so you can write a very small amount of music that'll sound generative and transitory for a very long amount of time relative to the memory it takes to store. And of course, a lot of those old games I'm sure Mark Bennis is right on the money with this, that necessity drives composition. It drove all sorts of aspects of those games. That's why, like, the famous example is that the clouds and the bushes in Super Mario Bros. 1 are the same sprite, just different colors. And it's because they didn't have enough memory for two different sprites. And this is the same sort of thing sonically. And the conference closed with a couple really killer talks for various reasons that I just thought were awesome. One of them is that there was a senior film scholar in the crowd, and he was on the program, and none of us... and so I had not looked at the program. I was like, oh, James DeVille is here. Man, I wonder what he's doing. I think, is he doing game stuff now? That's awesome. But what he did is not quite video games, but he talked about video game aesthetics in ISIS recruitment videos. And suddenly, the room, which was all like, here's Double Dragon, here, we're all awesome, it was like having a bunch of fun, right? Turned very serious. You know, it's hard to go into that conversation or come out of it lighthearted. But it was a fantastic, fascinating talk about how both ISIS and to a lesser extent the United States government as well, with things like America's Army and other military recruitment tools, use the aesthetics of video games. Things like camera aiming down a sniper rifle scope. In real life, that's a very boring activity that requires two people to do, because you have a spotter and a shooter. But in video games, and in all of these videos, it's a really, like, manly, active activity to do. And it's so obviously coming out of your choice of Counter-Strike or Call of Duty if you watch these films, which part of the problem is that it's one thing to engage them critically and, like, present them with the knowledge that we're then going to dissect and talk about what makes them tick and why it's scary. Media, I don't want to get into a lot of politics, but for lack of time, we'll say they've made a lot of mistakes in the past couple years. And one of them is that when ISIS originally released these recruitment videos, at least three major news networks aired them without comment or criticism. Just like, oh, this is interesting, this is news. And James argued that's precisely what they wanted to have happen with these things. You know, it's not about unfit for public consumption, but maybe unfit for public consumption without context. It was a really impressive range of stuff this year. Talking about, like, music theory and math when you're talking about the Pokemon loops, to talk about hardware sounds and hardware limitations with stuff. My own talk, was I had done a study, and I'm hoping to turn it into a GDC talk, so I'm not going to say too much about it. But I had recorded people playing Super Mario Maker levels that I had made. And I taped the buttons down, so you're always moving as fast as you can, like the challenges on the Wii U or like Super Mario Run. So all they have to do is hit jump. And I found that if I make levels such that the obstacles coincide with the musical downbeat, they do a lot better.
So who should go to this conference? Who is it for? And how can you get the most out of it?
Especially for people who have some connection to the industry already. You know, you have connections to the game industry in some way. Or you're really interested in either academic music or video game audio from the perspective of, like, MAGFest, is that there are very few venues that give you the opportunity to really sit, analyze, and think about music at a very high level in a public space. And this is one of them. And it's really useful to hear about what's going on, what makes the best of the best tick. Or, in some cases, what makes this game you haven't heard of so special. But this year's game that deserves talk about, and, like, anybody who even casually plays games, you know, any of your listeners would know that this is a game worth talking about, is Dana Plank gave a talk on Final Fantasy VI. And talked about madness and mental disability and mental... portrayals of mental health in Final Fantasy VI, specifically of Kefka, and how people talk about him as being crazy and how they blame him as being somehow mentally ill. And the way we talk about that is important, and the way the music represents him works against that in some ways, because it's the music that helps reinforce the clown, the commedia dell'arte, Harlequin, that comes from his artwork, of course. But that's a different way of thinking about him than describing him as mentally ill. which is how the game's characters mostly describe him. And so it's interesting to hear the music and the artwork work against, in some ways, a more positive representation of evil than just casting blame on something that actually applies to a lot of people in society. And it inspired me. I've been talking with a long time to Dana and a couple other people. I've just started playing through Final Fantasy VI on Twitch and having three or four game scholars talk live as we play about the music and about what's going on. And so we've put up the first two episodes, which is the first 6.5 hours of the game. And we will do the rest of it, but it's all at twitch.tv/bardicknowledge.
Is the conference going to be happening again? And where will it be? Luckily, Ryan had answers for us here, too. Well, some of them, at least.
There will definitely be another North American Video Game Music Conference in January. The location rotates from university to university based on who can host and based on what regions of the country have hosted it. There's a whole bunch of considerations that go into who on the program committee will host. But those discussions, to my knowledge, have not happened yet. And as a grad student for another couple months, I'm not privy to the inner workings of those conversations. And so I just will wait and see, along with everybody else. But if people want a central hub for academic video game music study, there's a new place that's just being set up now. It's SSSMG.org. And that is the Society for the Study of Sound and Music in Games. And for a long time now, I think next year will be the 5th year the North Americans have had a conference. The UK has had a game music conference for a lot longer. And this organization represents, in some ways, the union of those two conferences and those two communities.
Finally, we wanted to know where you could go to find out more, both about the conference and Ryan himself.
If you want to do more about academic music writ large, SSSMG.org is a great place to start. Or you can Google the North American Conference on Video Game Audio. There's also a Facebook group under Ludomusicology. As for me, I'm on Twitter the most, but I'm very recently on Twitch. There's a couple videos of Final Fantasy VI with me, Dana Plank, who spoke on musical representations of madness in Final Fantasy VI. Doug Perry is with us one of the days. And we've gotten a couple just awesome people in game audio and game music scholarship to kind of participate and talk through Final Fantasy VI, and it's going really well.
We left the conversation excited about the conference and where it'll go in the future. Thanks again to Ryan for joining us, and see you next time on Solo Track. Thanks, everyone, for joining us this week for the Overclocked Podcast. I hope you enjoyed all that we had to offer this week.
I hope you hated it.
Yeah, Steven's a little bit grumpy today, but that's okay because we're about to get out of here.
I'm just kidding.
If you would like to find out more about Overclocked Remix, head over to ocremix.org.
That's a good idea. We're on Twitter, too. That's a good way to get in touch with us in case you have any, submission suggestions for the playlist or the like at OCR Podcast.
Yeah, and if you have any long-form submissions or ideas you want to send our way, email us at podcast@ocremix.org.
And with that, we'll say goodbye to you and goodbye to our contributors. Of course, Sin, he wrote the Remix Rewinds this week, as he does every week. Also, Mikolai, it was very good to finally meet him. It was a long time coming. And Ryan, for putting together a little interview for the Solo Track, which we haven't had in a while. That was really interesting.
Yeah, I'm glad we got him on. And I'm also glad that we're jumping into this week's playlist.
The playlist is a weekly collection of listener-submitted recommendations so we can all discover music together. This week's theme is vocal tracks.
O-Chunk's Warrior from Super Paper Mario and submitted by Patch Pim.
Wake up, get up, get out there. From Persona 5 and submitted by Phoenix Down.
Opening from Final Fantasy X2 and submitted by Yorito.
The theme to Death Tank Zwei from Death Tank Zwei. And submitted by Ano.
Let's go away from USA and submitted by Major Third.
Deja Vu from The World Ends With You and submitted by Diodes.
Seven Rings in Hand, Fairy Tales in Trance. From Face to Faith, Sonic and the Black Knight vocal tracks, and submitted by Viking ZX. Secret Area from Battle Block Theater and submitted by Joseph G. Oh! Anna from Device 6 and submitted by JH Sound.
In the Water, from Telltale's The Walking Dead, Season 2, and submitted by Sin.
You hold your every breath. Life is for the living in the water. Oh. You feel that you should run. Where are you to hide in the water? Oh, against the tide we struggle. Skin wearing. Against the tide we struggle to keep our heads above the deep. The heart's above the light, above the light. We vow your life and blood. This is not our home in the water. Oh, yeah, our hope here's never found. Just try and keep your way. Water, oh. Against the tide we struggle, skin wearing. Against the tide we struggle to keep our heads above the deep, our hearts above the light, above the light. Who we are today can never make amends for what we've done. Tainted blood in his eyes. His eyes are full of love. Forgive them. Release them. Oh,
You've been listening to the Overclocked Podcast. Next week's playlist is hip-hop. Pull out all the stops for your favorite beat-based BGM. To submit your own suggestions,
or just say, give yourself to the rhythm,
hit us up on Twitter at OCR Podcast. Email us at podcast@ocremix.org or visit us on the forums at ocremix.org. This week's lyrical wisdom brought to you by JH Sounds.
Come on, run away. You don't have to stay. We're nearly out of time, but you're doing fine. So stay on track and don't look back. Just feel the pace. Come on now. Race.